Hello everyone and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It is January the 28th of 2019. I am Nick, here with Chris. Yes.
It happened again, by the way, Nick.
What is that?
I watched another episode of the Great British Baking Competition and it made me cry.
Right? Okay.
Well, this time he actually did get eliminated. His name's Terry, which Hartel, but so anybody who's watched it probably knows who I'm talking about at this point. But I mentioned before, very sweet, small old dude, little curly mustache, very friendly, talks like Winnie the Pooh. He's just like, oh, Bulba, I'm so glad you enjoyed my meringue. And he gets eliminated, which isn't a surprise because he's done terrible Aww. In almost every contest. And they cut to him, like they're doing like the farewell interview. And I want to note that they've described to him a little bit. They're like, Terry, in you know, a retired whatever, spends his time artistrying and enjoying time with his obstinate horse. Like, they just give you, like, small little
his details. Obstinate horse.
Yeah, it's like a shot of him on it. So it's like, come on now, go, please.
please, Trot, please.
But they haven't given any fucking context to this guy. You don't know, like, a story to him, because that's not really the style of the show. So they do his farewell interview, and it's just him looking off to the side, and you can see he's clearly really emotional, and he's like, you know, it's hard being by yourself. You know, it's been tough since I lost my wife to cancer.
No!
This baking and this contest have helped to really fill the void that I've lost with her. So, very, very grateful. Very, very thankful for the friendships I've made here. They'll carry with me my life. So, very thankful. And you're just like, no! You can't do this to me! You can't drop that he has a dead wife from cancer and that this contest made him happy. What the fuck? No heads up, no warnings about this. Just like, oh, the sad British guy's gone hard cut. By the way, his wife's dead. He's sad and miserable. Like, fuck you. Goddamn Great British Baking Competition.
You can't give the guy his peanuts and then take the peanuts away.
You can't just do that to me. He did write and pen a very, very nice letter, because a lot of people were like me and were heartbroken about this, and he penned a letter like, he's so grateful for everyone's support. He doesn't use things like email or social media, but he's heard the outpouring, and he's like, this is great, so thank you everybody for, like, a very sweet letter. And you're like, fuck man, I fucking wanted to see people bake some shit. I didn't need fucking my heart just ripped in half.
So it's okay, Chris. Your heart reached him. It's okay.
Yeah, 6 months after the show the show ended, and I'm watching it Netflix. Maybe he listens to this podcast, and he's been
maybe Christopher, the British equivalent of Rollo T, had similar feelings and had an outpouring of support go his way, and that's why.
I hope Christopher gets hit by a fucking car.
Christopher.
So that I could take his opportunities.
I want to.
I want to be the British me.
All right. We've got to get moving because we're starting late, which is basically not directly my fault, more the maintenance group guy at my apartment's fault for showing up in the middle of my sleep cycle and waking me up and making me very tired right now. It's his fault why we're starting late. Absolutely. But it's okay. We're gonna get going. And before we do that, I do have one quick bit of news to share. Some of you might have seen me write about this on Twitter, or seen someone else write about this on Twitter, because Anime News Network did a story about it. The Manga Plus app that Shueisha has been running in Japan is going to be internationally available now, with English chapters and apparently soon Spanish chapters available for free. So it's essentially the same thing that Viz is doing. The most recent three chapters are going to be available, but not only is it basically doing every Shonen Jump series, not just the ones that are covered currently by Viz, but even, like, you know, I'm from Japan, for example, you can read the most recent chapters on there. But it's going to be available everywhere except for China and South Korea. So if you're not reading manga, it's available everywhere for free if you've got a phone or a computer. So, yay. That's it. That's all I wanted to share about that. Read the manga legally. Yay. Okay, Chris.
Yes.
Let's do this thing. Let's continue doing the recap, which you do weekly, regarding manga.
What would we call it?
We could call it Recap Manga Weekly.
I like it. It's catchy.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's call it Botch Snap.
It'll last forever. Okay. We're going to begin with My Hero Academia, which begins with a 2-page color spread. This is basically a celebration of the character popularity poll. So the 10 most popular characters are on there, and basically a dark fantasy poster. I like some of the stuff that's going on here, like how Todoroki is an evil demon overlord with half of his face is all corrupt and stuff. It's a cool looking poster, and I wish that Jiro had won more than just the Nick popularity poll, so she could show up on it.
Nick,
oh well.
You just need to multiply yourselves, and then you could vote a million times, and Jiro would win everything.
I don't know if people could handle that many me's. I don't know if having an Agent Smith power is really the right move in this situation. I can make much more important changes happen. So I'll get to work on that.
Okay. I'm imagining the mass of indifferent harumphs to certain things. Just like Nick,
when Kingdom Hearts came out,
it's just a crowd of going back in an enormous crowd wave.
Anyway. So, it's chapter 214, Our Brawl, which continues the team fight after the interruption caused by Midoriya's one-for-all ability awakening. We get a little bit of the conversation between Vlad King and Toshinori and Aizawa, and Aizawa's just like, let's see what happens. I'm sure that this will be fine. And so they just let stuff continue to fight. Shinso briefly snags Midoriya with his capture scarf, and Uraraka's like, oh my god, he actually grabbed you and threw you, and she realizes, wait a minute, you're not using your quirk. And he says I can't risk using it right now. And then Uraraka says, well then run away. And he says, no, not when he's right in front of me. This is my chance for victory. He's gonna fight quirkless? No. That's not what I'm planning. Anyway, I need your help, Uraraka. Timing, I guess? Okay. We see some stuff going on between, some of the minor characters that are engaged in battle. Basically, everyone except for Uraraka, Midoriya, Monoma, and Shinso are all having their own group fight over to the side. There is a joke where Mineta deflects one of the projectile shots with, a shield made of his sticky balls. And it drives him into Ashido's boob, which apparently was his plan. Ashido responds to this by throwing him, and he rebounds like a pinball off of a bunch of the sticky balls that he has left everywhere. Okay.
He also seems upset that the one ghost girl keeps dodging, and he's like, come on, don't dodge.
Let me smother your boobs too.
Classic Mineta. He's winning his fans, his detractors over every day, I think.
I'm sure that this did wonders for...
I haven't heard a dub. Do you think Vic Mignogna plays Mineta? Is he doing it?
Mineta is actually played by a woman, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Good then.
So in case you didn't hear what date we're doing this, that'll give you and you're listening to this months later, that'll give you an idea of what time this episode's coming out. Yeah. Anyhow, Monoma, meanwhile, is having a little bit of an inner monologue, talking about how he doesn't possess the capability to be the main character. And he uses very choony terms like that throughout the speech. I've just got to be the supporting role and upstage the lead because he has swiped a power and it looks like he's going to use One for All. And Deku gets really terrified for a second. And Uraraka says, hey, on, you don't do that. And she just flips behind him using her gunhead martial arts, pins him to the ground. And she's like, ah, he was bluffing. Go, Miria. Meanwhile, Monoma just thinks to himself, it didn't activate. I drew a blank. So presumably, due to the odd way that One for All works, he copied Midoriya's quirklessness instead. I think that's what's going on here. But anyway, Deku floats up to Shinso and confronts him. And we get a little flashback from Shinso's perspective of his training with the Razorhead, which apparently using the capture scarf involves tying yourself up in knots a lot until you actually get good at it. But there's a little bit of a connection between Aizawa and himself because Aizawa was like, if things go wrong for us, we're dead if we can't rely on ourselves. So you've got to learn to be completely dependable by just practicing with that. And, I'm not the type that will waste time on hopeless causes. You know, you could do this. I also established that, like, it took him 5 years to perfect the capture scarf, but also he had to teach himself. He didn't have an instructor, so Shinso will probably hopefully catch on to it much more quickly than that. So in the present, Shinso uses the capture scarf to drag some like piping above them down to try and smash Deku. And Deku just immediately like, I'm going to use this new quirk that I discovered I have and use the black tendrils to grab the pipes. And that's the end of the chapter.
So it is significant that he chose to use that because he mentioned, like, I'm not going to use All for One right now. But he did. It's like that weird worrying of like, but I did say I'm not going to use this, my new Black Whip power. So there's some cool stuff there. I'm also not sure because I feel like Monoma's quirk has been super duper explained. Part of me is wondering if also like this could be one thing because this is also like a weird like extra context for Monoma that makes him much less of a shithead. When he's kind of like, expositing how he's always going to be the support role. But I don't know if it's supposed to be something where he's going to be like, I drew a blank. Like, oh, is Deku actually quirkless? Like, is this something that he's supposed to be pulling in there? Or if there's a good, like a specification to how Monoma's quirk works. Because he mentioned before, I could draw a bad card. So maybe it's just possible that when he steals quirks, he doesn't take the full quirk. Maybe he could sometimes accidentally take part of it. Or just the negative parts of it or something. Like, I don't know. There must be some factor to it for him to have said, like, oh, so what if I could draw a blank or something, or I could draw a bad card or something like that. So,
yeah, he doesn't seem all too shocked that this happened. That's a good point.
I do like that Uraraka looks pretty cool in this, getting to subdue Monoma, calling out the bluff, and then also helping Deku get up there. So I'm glad she has a moment there.
I'm not sure how I feel about Deku just being like, okay, I'll use this new quirk right after he's learned that he, has it, especially after the first time it activated, that it freaked everyone the hell out. But, I guess we'll see how this goes.
Yep.
We're going to move on then to Food Wars Shokugeki no Soma. It is chapter 296, Crossed Knives. So this chapter happened. Was furious about this chapter.
Yeah, this is a chapter that...
This was so aggravating.
This, the best way, because can we just skip the chapter and just talk about its ramifications? Because we're already short on time.
So Asahi beats Tsukasa. Yeah. And honestly, we're not really skipping over a whole lot in saying that. Because
they don't describe his dish really. Like, there's not like a big fucking strip down scene or anything like that.
No.
To be like, hey, here's why this dish was amazing or anything like that. It's sort of like an offhand, like, holy shit, his food's really good. Asahi wins. You're like, that's not a lot of fanfare for fucking AC Tsukasa to lose, but whatever.
When I first read this chapter, I literally thought that I might have skipped over the part where Tsukasa presents his dish. because apparently nobody tries it in this. Which I honestly, if that had been a more deliberate measure, like everyone is so blown away by the dish that they just immediately declare Asahi the winner without even tasting Tsukasa's because Asahi is so good, then that would have actually been at least deliberate. But you just don't see anyone taste Tsukasa's dish. And yeah, it's just like, okay, fine.
Whatever, I guess. So, like, the big thing is they reveal Asahi's cooking style. He has all these knives, and apparently his style is he takes your knife after he beats you, and he takes your style of cooking. So his specialty is combining kind of two specialties. And that's
crossed knives. He takes one knife from one person, one knife from another person, and combines their abilities by crossing them together.
And the reason he has so many fucking knives is because he just eliminated everyone in Noir. He took all of their knives and...
Well, not everyone. All of the ones that didn't get a pass the first round. So clown guy, bunny girl, blood injector guy. And he just took Sarge's chainsaw knife thing, too. Yeah. So, yeah, all those people that we were introduced to are now done. Didn't even see them get eliminated. He just was like, fuck all of you, and beats them in really fast matches off panel and takes their stuff so that he can have their abilities instead, which is fine because, honestly, the only thing we knew about them was that ability. So, okay, no big loss there. But... This is going to be the whole thing where he's like, oh my God, he's beating Tsukasa handily. And just like, I don't really buy it. And they say now it's like, oh, and now he has Tsukasa's ability to bring out the best in ingredients, which apparently isn't all that great if he could just kick his ass anyway this easily. Blech. So after that, and this does, I guess, explain why Sarge was just like, the secret is in that knife of yours. Okay. So he beat Soma and didn't even consider his knife worth keeping. He didn't even consider Soma's talent worth keeping. Oh. So big insult there. Soma realizes this after witnessing the match and is like, oh, what a jerk. He randomly comes across Erina and she, starts to try to strike up a conversation and she's clearly distracted and just walks off without saying anything. But before someone can think much about that, suddenly Megumi shows up and says, Takumi's in trouble! That's where the chapter ends. Very upset when I read this chapter because it was just like, you gotta make this a big deal! Come on!
I mean, like, the best idea I have is, like, because I'm getting, like, such impressions of the World Cup arc from Ice Shield where I'm like, oh no, we're building this stuff up, but we don't have time for it. Like, I don't know if Food Wars is, because we kind of got the idea this is probably the final arc. It's maybe very quickly has to be the final arc, and maybe they're like, oh, we don't have time to have like five fucking clown peoples. Because, I mean, we spent so long in the gate challenges to then have him eliminate like 80% of Noir that we know in one like off-panel scene. Like, is the Yu-Gi-Oh guy even still around? He was at the first gate. He was worse than them, so presumably we're not going to see him again.
It wasn't worth taking, Chris. He managed to slip by.
I don't know. It's a very confusing notion there, and then just to very quickly dismiss like Tsukasa, and you're like, I mean, it could have been a very cool thing to see these two characters fight, but then it's like, nah, you know, I mean, he beats him. He took his talent. You're like, I mean, I just don't get why you would do almost everything in this chapter. Like, I do think it's a cool notion that it's like, oh, he combines two styles together or whatever. And you're like, okay, that's kind of interesting. But it's just such a disappointing way to get all of it across.
There's also just a lot of little things in this chapter. I won't go over all of them, but I'll name one that did really annoy me. Like, at the very beginning of the chapter, you know, Asahi says to Tsukasa, hey, when I beat you, you're going to give me that greater sword of yours. And Tsukasa just goes, like, looks at him. And then Asahi says, you're not going to say no, right? Didn't think so. Okay.
And they're like, legally binding deal.
you did not object, therefore you agreed. It's like, okay, he's going to give up his knife to me if he loses his what? What?
Like, it's astonishing. Like, we've never seen Tsukasa lose a one-on-one fight before. And this dude beats him in, how long is, it's, what, three pages?
Well, they start cooking on...
But, like, with the dishes presented, because usually it's like a two-chapter sort of thing.
Right.
Here's one person's dish, here's the other.
We see Asahi prepping for two pages, the dishes presented and eaten in three pages, and then Tsukasa loses.
So it's a very disappointing. And the only thing I hope is that the end of the chapter is like, oh no, Takumi's fucking, he fell and broke his leg. Like, I just hope we're abridging almost all of this fucking tournament at this point, because it's like, there's nothing to care about now except for Soma fights Asahi. There's nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, Tsukasa gone eliminates that storyline. Erina participating is sort of like, I mean, she's
there.
She's essentially a prize to be won at this point.
She is.
Megumi just fucking does nothing, so who cares? Like,
she's present.
I don't even know if, like, is there the guy who actually physically kidnapped Erina is the only other person from Noir I think we haven't seen. And I don't know. He might have been beaten too. I don't know.
Well, the people who were hanging out with Asahi when he kidnapped her, I think I would guess that they're going to have a larger role to play. But honestly, I'm not sure because, yeah, it really does seem
Sarge was part of it too. And they just, I mean, she lost Soma, but I mean, he served the same thing. Yeah, she was there because I remember Nazi girl with the chainsaw sword being in those scenes.
Okay. Fuck's sake. I don't know, man. All right. Yeah. Let's move on from that. I guess that we can do, because we've got Boruto this week. So let's see here. Why don't we do Eden Zero next?
All right. Well, let's talk about Eden Zero. Chapter 28, New Friends. So we get a nice little color page. And
I don't like this color page.
Okay.
It looks ugly. No, I'm serious. It looks ugly. It's got a really boring background.
Just the background bothers you?
It's a weird color scheme with, like, the white going into purple. It looks incomplete.
I kind of like the colors just because that's, like, an aesthetic I dig. But it bothers me that Homura is positioned like that because I keep thinking there's a second page to this that's supposed to be something, but it's not. Like, she's just weirdly the foreground. I don't know. Whatever.
Also, why is she shushing me?
I don't know.
Rude.
Shut up, Nick. Fuck you. That's what you're saying. So the chronophage attacked Gilst, took away 1,200 years, and it's a very big deal. So we start off on the Eden Zero as characters are kind of reacting to that. Sister specifically notes, like, yeah, probably not everyone made it out. Like, just law of averages, they're not going to. And then Witch shows up and, you know, does her whole, like, super calculation for everything. And we see Witch and Sister kind of meet up. We see there is a contrast to personalities. It's interesting. I don't know how to completely feel about it, but I guess it's interesting to say Sister really does kind of have, like, this kind of punk attitude towards everything. So it's definitely a different aesthetic to have.
I also like the comment that she makes about, you know, because... Which says anyone left behind will no longer be alive. And so it's just like, well, if you come back in 1,200 years, they will be. But, you know.
Yeah. Happy reunites with Rebecca. She says thanks to everyone for saving her. Then she has, like, traumatic flashbacks to everything happening on Gilst and is like, why am I getting scared now?
Oh, my God. All that stuff was really terrifying, actually.
Yeah. Chiki's crying about it too, but it's like a happy friendship moment because, like, hey, we're all crying, everything like that. So they have a big giant meeting. They talk about how, hey, cool, we found Sister. So now we have two of the four. I don't remember if they had it like the four stars or the four generals. I forget what their exact name was. But they say, like, hey, we have two of the robots we need to activate Eden Zero's true powers. So we just got to find Valkyrie and Hermit. And hey, guess what? It turns out that Valkyrie is the master of Homura, and that's why Homura is here, and that's why she has a cool sword, because it's originally Valkyrie's sword. So that's just the explanation we get as to why Homura is here, why she wants to train with Shiki, because, you know, they have kind of a connection between one another via their masters. Yeah. And there is an odd moment because Shiki's like, you know, Homura's like, that's why I want to fight you. And Shiki's like, I don't want to fight my friends. She's like, for friends? And it like, it works there. But then they weirdly cut to beneath the table to her knees. And I'm like, why is the camera panning here for this point of the conversation?
I was assuming it was to show her posture, to show that she's a little bit nervous, apprehensive. So
possible. I mean, I think you could get that across. It feels like it's just a cheesecakey shot to me.
Mm.
But yeah, she's like, hey.
Oh, yeah. Look at those knees.
I mean, fuck.
I'm sure it does it for someone.
Yeah, I was like, for as much foot fetish shit as is out there. I don't know. So yeah, she's like, hey, let me stay aboard your ship. They're like, cool, happy to have you. And then Roy's like, hey, but see that dude, don't know, where do we find Valkyrie or Hermit? And everyone's like, so you're coming with us?
I can't understand your accent, Weiss. Can you, like, you know, speak actual English?
Oh, cool, blimey, I can't understand me accents, they can't. So yeah, they're like, hey, you're coming with us? And he's like, everyone's like, yeah, absolutely, why wouldn't you? And they all kind of talk about how he's helped them in different ways. He's like, you're definitely our friend now. And he's like, guys, guess I am. Got new ears to go, so I do some stick arounds, war, don't say. And he goes to give a handshake to Shiki, but it's somehow intercepted by Moskoi. I don't understand how it's intercepted. He just appears between them.
He's a ninja.
And Moskoi is apparently one of sister's minions, but it was turned by... Fake sister. Yeah, I guess she didn't actually have it in her name. Turns out, yeah, he's the ship's caretaker. And there's a joke about how he has the button on his stomach that says, don't push. And he keeps trying to push it. So sister has to keep yelling at him not to.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a character hanging around. He's got a very hilarious gimmick, Nick.
He does this a lot. Worst thing that sister has done so far is bring this character back.
Do you think it makes her worse than the fake sister who is kidnapping people and helping them into trafficking?
It depends on how many times he shows up in the future. Okay. Because let's be real, there was a lot of really bad shit in that arc, and the entire arc can essentially be blamed on the fake sister. So all of the sexual stuff in it, it's her fault. That will, I'm sure, eventually be overtaken by annoying Moskoi moments if he sticks around for long enough and keeps on making appearances. Gotcha. So.
We then cut over to the space police, whose name I don't remember, and the characters in it, whose names I don't remember. I think there was, like, Justice and Truth and Virtue. It was stupid fucking loser names like that.
One of them definitely didn't have a thing for not Urza or something.
Definitely not. Definitely not the one who looks like white hair Gerard.
Who turns into regular Gerard when he's activates some ether gear thing.
I forgot the fucking detail of this stupid shit. Alright. So they're like less than 10% got off of the fucking planet. They're like, who cares? It was a bunch of
millions of people died.
Whatever, millions of people died. What do you think about that, Captain Jaguar? And he's like, thanks.
I have weird facial hair.
Thanks to the chronophage, an old threat has been set loose in the cosmos. The man who turned Gilst into that high divinity, one of the Aracion Six Galactica, because this villain group is so iconic, it needs to be pervasive in every series I do.
Wait until you meet the Galactic Aracion Sace.
Come on, man. The Aracion Six has been getting lamer and lamer with every iteration.
Look at this guy and his stupid eyebrows.
Yeah, so Draken Joe, otherwise known as the Dark Alchemist, has been...
Draken Joe!
I am fascinated that Hero is so enamored with the term Aracion Six that he has put them in every, like, yeah, I get, obviously, you created the identity with Ferret, with Ravemaster, and then it's like, I guess, a quote-unquote cute callback in Fairy Tail. To bring it up again, it's like, man, you think this name is something amazing, and it's really not.
Maybe if you say it's, like, in Japanese, it sounds like the most amazing thing ever.
Even if it does, I mean, it's just a weird thing to be like, eh? Every series has Narration 6!
Well, obviously, we have to wait until Hiro has done three more series, and then he will have Araceon Saces.
That'd be great. And then we could do an Araceon Saces of Araceon Saces. Yeah, it's
very. And have the big ultimate crossover at the end of it, when like one representative from each group comes in, or like all six teams come together, like a Power Rangers crossover special.
And you're like,
and they're just all, and of course they're all equally worthless and just get their asses kicked by one of the heroes.
I was like, I don't want to bring anyone from the Fairy Tale one. They all sucked.
I don't even remember any of the ones from the.
It was Racer. The dude who was like a Bible guy who had square face stuff, who like melted rock, the dude on the magic carpet, Brain, I think was one, or Brian. I don't remember. It might've just been Brian, magic girl. And I don't remember who the last one was.
Who cares? All right.
Gerard.
Fine. Let's do Boruto.
All right.
Number 31, monsters! There's two exclamation points, so you have to say it that way.
Monsters!
Delta confronts Naruto, wants to take Kawaki. Naruto tells Boruto to defend Himawari and for Kawaki to look out after himself. And he says, leave the kids alone. And he's like, I don't care about your children, I just want Kawaki. And he's like, you misunderstand. Kawaki's an important guest of mine. I included him among the kids. And Delta's like, oh, you're pretty irritating. I think I'll kill you. Rude. Anyway, so they fight. Delta, her thing is that her entire body has been modified with ninja tool stuff, the same as how Kawaki's body has. So she, you know, attacks with a lot of kicks and stuff. She absorbs a Rasengan into her eyes when Naruto tries to use it. She summons these giant blade things from her legs. There is a cool shot where after she first uses it, she like stands up and she's got like this weird, like hooked hoof of a leg. It's an interesting look. She gets the better of Naruto actually pretty quickly and stabs him through the stomach with an extension from her leg. And even when Naruto tries to use the tailed beast mode hands to try and get her, she just keeps on kicking him around and eventually, you know, drives her heel into his stomach again. And Naruto's like, I'm not going to let you hurt any of them. And eventually, like, he starts asking questions of her. And he's like, why are you so hung up on Kawaki? What is he to you? And Delta's like, why do you care so much when you're going to be killed? And Naruto's like, you know, it's my job to wonder. And then she grinds the blade into his stomach for a bit and then rips it out. He's like, ah! And then she says, you're a really bad actor. I'm not buying it. And Naruto's like, oh, you saw through it, eh? And the stomach wound immediately regenerates, including his clothes over it, and he's fine. And Delta's like, come on. And Naruto says, yeah, I thought that if I seemed weakened, you might, you know, exposit some and tip your hand to me. So I pretended to get my ass kicked. And they fight some more. Basically, it's.
I really like this chapter.
It's an action chapter.
Even beyond the action stuff, which I think is really good, I just like the character moments in there. Because there's another moment that's pretty sweet where she's just like, look, I don't give a fuck about you. I don't give a fuck about your kids. I just want Kawaki. And Naruto has this very cool line where he's like, you don't understand. Kawaki was included in what I said. You know, the part about not laying it.
I've already adopted him.
It's a very sweet sentiment, though. It's a very Naruto moment that's very cool. And I do like that his plan was like, oh, no. Hey, tell me about your villain plan. And she's like, no, I'm not stupid. Like, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to be like, well, you're so weak, I suppose I can tell you about our headquarters.
Also, she shoots the Rasengan back out of her eyes, and that's a pretty cool shot.
Yeah, I really think, like, this was kind of what, fuck, what's their name? Hana? Or what's their villain group? I can't remember. Whatever their villain group is.
This chapter, I still don't know.
They needed a moment like this where these, like, lead or chair members or whatever their names were needed to look cool. Like, I know her name's Delta. I don't know what the villain group is. Kara, that's it. They needed to look cool, and I think this was a really strong moment for that. Like, she seems unique and cool. I like her design, you know, and it's just a sweet moment. Like, it's cool when you have to watch Boruto staring off from the outside. And he's like, I can't do
shit.
Anything here.
I'm worthless here. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty fast-paced action chapter. When I say it out loud and summarize it, when I was preparing to summarize it, I was like, wow, this is actually really stupid when you just, like, say it out loud. I do like that Naruto has apparently learned the art of war and deception. He's just really, really bad at it. And yeah, I mean, I don't really have a lot to, like, criticize about, because it's just like, okay, you know, cool action chapter. So.
Yeah. Super nugget.
All right, let's go on to Hell Warden Higuma. It's Chapter 5, Life Force Part 3. Last time, Higuma knocked one of the guy's diamond shots back with this giant club thing. And he goes after the guy, knocks him across the face with the club. And now the guy realizes he's going to lose. So the Raven Demon guy says, you know, begs for forgiveness, begs for his life. And it looks like Higuma's going to have just no mercy for a second. But he says, like, no, listen, you know, I know what you're thinking. You know, I just want to live. I don't want to go back to hell. And I know what you're thinking. You know, he's already died. So what is he talking about? But you must understand, those of us who escaped the underworld, we used to belong in this realm. And I don't steal people's lives because I like doing it. I just want to remain here in this peaceful realm I knew in better times. You're a human like I once was, so you must understand what it feels like to fear hell and yearn to stay alive. But I need life force to do that. I'm being truthful when I don't want to steal people's lives when they're young. You know, they've already lived long, full, rich lives, and that's why I'm doing it this way. That I also need to do an volume in order to get by like that. Come on, and hey. In case you haven't realized that I'm doing just saying whatever in order to let you give me you to let me live, join me and I will make you immortal. But Higuma just pauses for a second and takes off his hat and says, I do understand, actually. See, everyone's afraid of hell. And of course, everyone who's been there definitely is afraid of it. And it doesn't matter if they're a sinner or a saint. The fear and the emotional struggle don't change. It's easy to be dismissive and say that people reap what they sow, but the truth isn't that simple. This is probably my favorite moment in the chapter. Just this kind of implication that Higuma is, you know, just alluding to things that aren't being completely explained just yet. Like he's got some sort of experience that lets him have some sort of personal connection to this idea. But of course, he's not just going to let the guy off that easily, because he's like, you're still, you know, killing people. You're stealing people's lives, their time, their future, their very lives. And we actually see a moment from the cloaked guy. And look, he does have a face. Look, he's got an eye, Chris. See?
There you go. He has an eye. You can also see the slight outline of a nose.
Yeah. But he recalls just, you know, as a kid spending time with his elderly grandfather and how, and just a small moment, and it puts a smile on his face to remember that. And he says, like, it doesn't matter how much time they have left. They had some time, and you're taking away their time, their future, their very lives. And it doesn't matter how you try to justify it. You don't have the right to take that from them. You're treating them like currency instead of real people. So the guy immediately tries to just book it, and he tries to use his diamond shot to just attack the old people so that Higuma will be distracted. And Higuma's like, no, I knew you were going to do that. And two of his hands have carried Roku, the little burning thing, over to them, and his flames just incinerate the diamond shot and protect them. And then teleport the diamond shot over behind the guy, and it bounces off of his head. And Higuma summons number zero of his Zaiju, which is this giant blade named Kainagi, and he cuts the guy's hands off, and that's where the chapter ends.
All right.
I don't have a whole lot to say about this chapter outside of that one moment that I took note of, because this is honestly pretty basic stuff. Like, this is what, you know, a good guy hero would say in this situation, which is like, fuck you. I don't care if you're just taking life from old people, you're killing people. Fuck you. So yeah,
it's a strong moment. Yeah. It's executed well. It's very good.
Cool art.
All right. Let's talk about Neolation then, Process 6, Puppet. So we open with Saki about to jump off the building.
Yuko.
No, what's his name?
Oh.
Professor. Someone. Aizen?
No.
Something like that.
Isn't it like...
Someone posted it for me earlier and I've completely forgotten it. Whatever. Dickhead Professor is watching. And he's like, good. Right on the schedule. But then, yeah, Yuko...
Anzai.
Anzai. That's it.
Or Lemming.
Yuko shows up and, you know, is telling her, no, don't jump. You know, is kind of telling her, like, no, if you don't, I'll miss you. You know, that's why I came here for you, so please don't. And, you know, she's, you know, Saki's very upset about this. She's saying, no, everyone will hate me if I don't do as I'm told. And she says, did Lemming tell you that? Because you don't have to worry about him. We have the most powerful wizard on our side. And he's going to send Lemming packing. And she says, look at this video. And then both of them turn, like, to the left. And Aizen's like, oh, fuck.
Anzai.
Anzai's like, wait, what are you doing? Why are you looking at me?
Damn, turns out I'm not a master manipulator and planner like Aizen.
And Nia's like, hey, good morning, Anzai, or should I say Lemming. And basically they show that, yeah, you were trying to film the suicide, but you're the one who's been filmed instead.
I love the expression he's making on the phone. Where he's like,
what's happening?
Smile, you're on candid camera, dude.
And I like his like an explanation. He's like, well, I was just coming up here to see the morning light, and I was filming it. And then this girl was there. And he's like, now, fuck you. I hacked in Kodo, and I found all the footage of the other victim's suicides, too.
A more believable story would have been, I'm a pervert and was filming her.
I happened to see her. But it's not illegal yet, I think.
It's just creepy.
Yeah, it's a misdemeanor, I believe. I mean, in New York, you can go to your windows with your cock out. No one will stop you. So he's like, hey, you know, we have all the evidence we need. And Anzai's like laughing to him. So he's like, ah, good. You and I were the same breed of criminal. You join me
and I'll use the life force I've stolen to make you immortal.
Yeah, he's basically just like, you know, we know the pleasure of making people do what we want. We can control people from all over the world. It's so much fun. And Neo's just like, you say that, but are you really even doing that? Saki's going to live. He's like, well, that was only due to interference. Didn't really count. So, you know. Do-over. Murder mulligan. Mulligan. Is what I call that. And Neo's just like, no. I mean, I don't want to listen to what some puppet has to say. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, don't you get it? You're being controlled by Motoko. He's like, no, that's ridiculous. I'm the programmer. Obviously, I'm controlling her. He's like, didn't you say that her entire thing is about reading and analyzing human behavior? He's like, yeah. And who's the person that that Motoko has the most interaction with? Well, I guess it's me. He's like, then wouldn't it make sense that if her whole thing's manipulating people and you're the only one who interacts with her, she's probably manipulating you?
No, because I have my own free will, obviously.
He's like, no, I'm the man. I'm the master here.
Master of puppets, I'm pulling your strings.
And he starts giving explanations. Like, it was your decision to turn your phone off and not go home yesterday. You didn't do it because Motoko organized you suggested you to. And he's like, ah, fuck, I'm the one activating my own free will. How dare you? And he finally loses it. And he's like, no, I can't let you release this information. I can't. Let's discuss the future of AI together. And he just had a fucking butcher's knife with him. He had like a murderer hanging behind him. And he's about to try to kill Neo. But
the way that all master manipulators have.
He's like, I'm like, all IT professionals have our murder knives that we need.
I also teach the butchery class on the side.
But then Diego jumps down from the top and punches him square in the face and says, quit your yapping. And they say, yeah, we've been filming you the entire time. And there's one more entity who's been watching this as well. Motoko, who predicted your entire next move on this with 0% error. So the entire time, you were the one being controlled. And I hacked Motoko to do control her and do the same thing. So how does it feel to be controlled by the very machine you built? And then very much like a Majin Tante Nogami Nero, he just has like a psychotic breakdown to end the chapter. And yeah, that's the chapter.
What a twist. Like,
I do like it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. This is really good. I mean, for the first proper story arc that Neolation put out, this was altogether really good and got me really interested in this series from the very beginning through the very end. You know, this quick little story that was about, what, 4 chapters, I think. But I am really into this series now as a result of it. So I have to give a lot of congratulations to this. So I really hope that this sticks around for a little bit, because this is a different sort of series that we can, you know, expect different sorts of things from. And hopefully things continue to be this good.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about We Never Learned. This is going to be a pretty quick chapter because honestly, not a lot happens in it.
Not a lot.
Question 96.
It's the same joke. It's the same joke like 3 times. Yeah. So
Genius is secretly X in response to his hurried, busied state. So all the girls are kind of talking about, they're like, oh, our grades are going up. We're doing awesome. And they're like, it's all thanks to you, Nariyuki. But he's really distracted. And he's like, sorry. Yeah, you're doing great. Principal's very proud of you. Gotta go. Bye.
So
he heads out. And of course, Takamoto and Fumino are like, what's up with that? Do you think he's dating someone? So they can't let it go. So they decide that they're going to follow him everywhere. They follow him to the maid cafe where he's working currently because Asumi is sick. Apparently, yeah. Like I don't think we ever saw her get sick, but she is.
No.
For the context of this, as to explain why they both need more maids and why Yuega's actually working there as like a waiter right now. And as
I like that they have this reaction to him with that when he's not wearing his glasses and he's in his, you know, waiter's get up and stuff, and they're like, oh my god.
And there's also like the small joke that Fumino is super like energetic and happy like when they have to sell the gimmick, and then Takamoto is like really shy, and everyone's like, oh, bravo, the shy demure one and the fiery bullet, what a combo. Your reputation,
I've got a half chub already.
Your reputation from the other cafe is very much intact.
Yeah, it turns out that they were expecting help to come over, so that's why they suddenly got roped into this.
Yeah. So then they follow Yuego. He goes to another place where he's now working at the department store again. And they go over and they have to
pretend. No, it's another store. It's just the same woman.
Yeah, it's the same woman. The one who I believe owned a massage parlor and a lingerie store. This one didn't have time for another sexy thing. It's just a regular clothing store. So the joke is that they have to Takamoto gets like caught out, so she has to pretend to be a mannequin and he has to like pick her up and shit.
They both hide, and so Fumino hides under a table and Uruka just poses like a mannequin, and I swear when I saw her doing that, I was like, I actually laughed. Like that her first instinct is just like she's in a Pink Panther movie or something.
He's just doing jobs back to back. That's cool. So they go to the udon shop and they're just looking for udon, and they're like, fuck, he's working a third job. And that's like the thing, is they're like, he's working so many jobs. It'd be really sad if you overworked yourself. And specifically, Yuega is like, apparently told Ogata not to tell anybody. They're like, oh, did you know he was working these? And she's like, nope, I'm not supposed to tell. Mum's the word.
And I do like that if you go back, you can see her, you know, doing that facial expression at the very beginning of the chapter when they're wondering about what's going on. Like, it's something that I didn't notice at first. But if you go back, it's like, okay, that was actually established. So
So then Amori comes in and he's like, hey, cool, can I have an udon, please? And he's eating it and he's just casually throws out there, hey, Yuega, why'd you give up the VIP recommendation? This thing's so good. And you see Ogata doing the mums the word again. And Yuega's like, oh, fuck. So that's the chapter and how it ends.
Big development. I mean, the majority of the chapter is just weird jokes, but one of them did land really well for me. But interesting development. It's like, oh, the entire reason why Yuega was doing all this stuff, all of a sudden, he has turned down. So taking a big step forward. And it does make me wonder, like, how much of the series could there be left with? I mean, like, you also see, like, the progress that all the girls are making on their tests and stuff like that. It seems like there's not a whole lot more room for them to improve. And so is it possible that we're kind of reaching the home stretch, maybe? Or it definitely feels that the series is at least more than halfway done. So.
And also, this might be, I don't know if it's intentional, because numbers are sometimes very subjective, but pointless. But the idea that we are getting close to chapter 100, so maybe the big revelation from Uega and all that comes out in a big one chapter 100 celebration or right around that point.
Mm. Who knows? All right, we're going to move on then to Dr. Stone. Z equals 91. Need bread? Start with wheat. So,
Terry did well during Bread Week.
So while Chris cries himself into a coma, the big decision that has been reached by the Kingdom of Science is that they need to make bread in order to have a long-lasting food supply while they are journeying across the ocean in order to find the Petrobeam source. And I like how immediately Ryusui just jumps to the conclusion of, like, we can make all these fancy baked goods pre-ocean Svogliatella, which I have never heard of before. And of course Kohaku has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. She thinks that they're like energy beam attacks because of the Shonen Jump education that they were given.
Brioche!
I mean, that is exactly like something that you know, someone like Toriyama would have done. So of course, first of all, they've got to plant the wheat that they have gathered together. So they go into the village, and I like that we have this brief little moment when we first reach there, because they're going to need to recruit Taiju and the Gorilla Squad, the really hard workers. And as Taiju is, you know, he's gathering some statues of petrified people and going about that, there's this random guy who spots one of the statues and says, "This is my dad." And it's a setup for a joke where it's just like, seriously saying, but it's like, oh yeah, there's going to be like people, yeah, seeing their loved ones be frozen eventually if you gather enough of them together. And that's got to be quite the experience of just like someone I deeply care about is just within reach and I can't do anything for them because it's, you know, the revival fluid is so important that we can't just expend it casually. So they're going to start planting fields, and immediately they set to work sowing stuff in rows. Gen comes up with the scheme because Yuzuriha weaves a straw hat because it's like, you know, it'd be good for blocking the sun, and, you know, farmers wear this stuff. And Gen uses this to encourage Yo and Magma to work harder because, like, whoever has the best field will be crowned the food king and wear this as their crown.
I do love he immediately grabs it. It's like, how wonderful! A crown for our leader! Like, doesn't miss a fucking step.
Yuzuriha's like, God, this guy. I also like
possibly dumb enough to go along with, oh wait, yeah, no, two people are exactly dumb enough to jump in on this.
I also like that Yo has you know, written down Yo's field on and I'll sign in his field, and Magma is illiterate, so he just draws a picture of his face. Taiju, however, is the hardest worker of all because he has limitless fucking stamina. And they're still, you know, seeing him work well into the night, not even slowing down. And he thinks he's just, you know, just, you know, he kind of thinks aloud for a little bit because he thinks about the guy who he spotted with his father and says, you know, I lost my parents when I was very young. If I could bring them back, I know I'd do whatever it took. But that's not possible. At the very least, I can help everyone else save their families. And he's, you know, determined, and like, this is where we start by getting all this food. And time passes, and Taiju's field is doing really well. There's all wheat is sprouting. Yo's field of Magma's not doing so hot, however. They're barely sprouting at all. And they're like, why aren't our fields growing? And Taiju comes by, and he's got this bag full of ground up seashells. And he's like, I don't really know how this works, but I just remember this thing that Senku told me a while back, you know, using lime to get rid of hydrogen ions, it levels up the soil. And I ground this up into powder and just spray it around just in case. And Senku comes by, Senku doesn't come by. He gets on the phone with them and he's like, oh, yeah. So if you want to test the quality of the soil that you're planting in, you do this, this, and this to create, as Gen calls it, litmus paper. And it can test to see, based on the color that it turns, what the acidity is. And since wheat won't grow in acidic soil, by doing this, Taiju has actually, just gotten a very strong field going. And Yo and Magma end up copying him eventually. But Taiju is clearly doing the best. And they, of course, award him the farming crown. And he gets a straw hat. And he's got this big old wheat field going. And then comes the end of the chapter. That would have been a really good ending, I think, on its own. But it ends on a much more humorous note because they're like, all right, we've got wheat. Let's bake some stuff. And immediately Rusui is imagining all of his awesome baked goods. And Senku's like, I have no idea what I'm doing, so don't expect this to be great. So they make stone baked bread, this weird charcoal husk, which, all the people from modern times are like, but all the people from the Stone Age future are like, this is delicious. It's amazing. It's weirdly crunchy, but it's apparently delicious. And they Senku and the others try eating and they're like, oh,
we're spoiled.
So they're just like, well, I'm sure that things are all right. But Ryusui and Senku realize, like, we can't sit out on this voyage with this kind of bread. We won't be able to eat this. We have no choice. We need to revive a top chef! So it made me realize that all of a sudden, in the past few months, Dr. Stone has turned into One Piece because Senku's got to gather the right members for his pirate crew in order to voyage across the world.
Yep, that's how it's working.
He's got his navigator. He's going to get a chef. Soon he's going to have a swordsman and a sniper. And
is there an actual, specific doctor either? I know he does a lot of, the medical stuff, but...
It's basically just been him.
Yeah.
So.
Only, I guess they're going to need a shipwright. Well, they need a musician, number one. They have right. one on a record, I guess, but that
yeah. doesn't count. Exactly.
I really like it. Saw a chapter. I like Taiju having his cool moment there. I think it was really satisfying.
Yeah, fun stuff.
All right, let's go to Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 297, The Salvation of the Sun. So last time, Mayo came and saved Escanor as he was sent flying, and now they have kind of their reuniting moment there. Diane's like, oh my god, you've been so fucked up! Pretty much. They know, like, how did you even find me? And he's like, your friend pointed you out, so we know where to catch you, so you wouldn't die. Elizabeth heals him, and then they think, we can't lose you, because if we did, the Camelot would be in serious trouble. And that reminds Escanor about the situation that was happening as he left. And he's like, Mael, I heard a lot of things about you, so originally the sunshine was your grace, right? You need to take it back. I need you to save everyone. He's like, no, I can't. My grace abandoned me when I was pulled into the darkness. It waited eons to choose someone new, and that's you, so I'm not fit for it anymore. And he's like, no, I can't handle the burden of sunshine anymore. Without its power, we can't beat the demon, so please, just take it. And Mael's still pretty resistant, so he says, fine, if you won't take it, then at least borrow it instead.
Well, he says it differently. He says it in a very particular way, I have to point out, because he's being very humble and is like, I'm desperate. I need you to do this. And he's like, no. And then he's like, well, if you don't want to take it, then I'll let you borrow it.
Yes, as the sin of pride, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So Mael is turned back by that. And he's thinking to loot a shell for the moment when he hears, like, I need you to please, save those precious to me. So we cut back to the scene. Merlin's like, I have 10 minutes. I still need to actually use this incantation, so don't wake up yet. Ludichel's fighting back against the first demon, and it's actually kind of successful. He's like, I'm doing damage to it. That's pretty surprising. I'm able to dodge his attacks. you know, blocks one. Then he has to, you know, hits him back and then blocks another one. He's like, why did that one get stronger? That doesn't make sense.
And the first that would hurt even more. Ow! Yeah, stop that!
First demon seems very happy about this. And he even bumps into Merlin at one point and kind of knocks her over. And he's like, I don't get it. Why is he getting stronger the more we hurt him? And they note that it's like, not only is he taking damage, he's actually breaking down. And they realize that that is his power, Crisis. The more his life is shaved away, the more his power grows in proportion. So the closer he is to death, the stronger he becomes. And the first demon's like, I don't even mind, you know, dying, because if it brings about the new Dark Lord, then I will gladly sacrifice myself for this. So it looks as though it's about to kill Ludichel when all of a sudden the skies open up and a beam of light surrounds them. And the first demon's like, how did my spell of darkness get punctured by this? And we see up in the sky is Mael piercing through the darkness, now strengthened by the sunshine power. So he has his Seraph back.
Yep.
Very cool, like, hero returns kind of moment.
Yeah.
And Zeldris even has a moment where he's like, ah, glad you came back, Esterosa. Or should I say, Mael.
I kind of hope that he did say it exactly like that. Ah, glad you're back, Esterosa. Or should I say, Mael.
Mael. Is it Mael or Mael? I don't know.
Mael. Whatever. Let's move on to Promised Neverland, why don't we?
Let's do it.
Chapter 120, Monsters Without Shape. Norman gives an explanation of what the creatures, the monsters, the demons, the whatever are, which is that they are actually bizarrely advanced creatures that do not have a normal form. They originally looked something like bacteria, probably. And basically what they did was they evolved by adopting traits from other species that they consumed. And as they did so, they, you know, took on beast-like forms, taking on various shapes, hence why you see so many demons that are, you know, beast-shaped, horse-shaped, monkey-shaped, dinosaur-shaped, particularly in the wild. And eventually, they ate humans, and by doing so, they acquired human form, human intelligence, language, culture, etc. And humans became their preferred food as a result of that, because they experienced intelligence, and, you know, they became these legendary, horrible creatures. But as a result of their rapid evolution, they cannot maintain the characteristics of humans unless they keep eating. They have to keep on eating humans, or they lose their human form, they lose their human intelligence. And even after the promise, they had to keep on eating humans. As a result of the mass production of human flesh, the traits that they get from humans is lower quality. So they aren't as intelligent when they eat it. They're very, so there's a whole thing in demon culture of like, oh, the quality of human meat is just not as good. I can't maintain my intelligence this way. Hence why people like Emma and the other people from Gracefield and the other high quality farms are so valued, and why they are raised to be intelligent, because the demons can stay intelligent by eating them. And finally, we have the explanation of like, oh, this is why we taught these kids to have an IQ of 300, you know. So, yeah. Good to have that. So, Norman's plan is basically to, and we get a little bit of information, for example, like, yo, I escaped from this special farm where they're trying to raise humans in more special ways. That's why there are people like Adam and Zazie who have these super enhanced abilities. Jin and Hayato, for example, are fast runners. It's because demons give them these advanced abilities so that they can eat them and then gain them themselves. So, my plan basically is we don't need to escape to another world. We don't need to make another promise or anything like that. Let's just kill all the demons.
Murder the fuck out of them.
We'll annihilate the demons. We'll make them extinct. The Neverland, where we can't become adults, is going to end. Let's establish a paradise for all of us in this demon world. And I love that as the chapter ends and he's giving this big sweeping gesture in this speech that he's probably given let's face it, a lot of times before as this, you know, cult leader, essentially. I love that all of the older kids that are hearing him talk have different degrees of surprise and concern on their faces. And at the very last shot in the chapter is Emma looking like, oh, God, genocide. My best friend wants to commit genocide and I'm a pacifist. But all the little kids are just like, yay, let's kill them all.
It's a very cool moment.
So, I'm pretty sure that this is the point where Emma is having the moment of tension with Norman now.
No, I bet we have like another 30 or 40 chapters before they're like, their philosophy.
Think about it.
She's like, you know what, Norman? Super great to see you. I'm going to get back to you on this whole, like,
human annihilation plan.
Ethnic cleansing of demons you're planning to do or whatever. Like, I super think it's cool that you're around and, like, you know, just gotta.
And you've even gotten the yellow armbands to put on their. Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm going to head back to my place real quick. Like pop in and out and just, you know, like mull it over, like, you know, just like the logistics stuff, because I'm super definitely in with this. But if you don't hear from me ever again, I'm definitely still coming. I promise.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, big bombshell of a chapter. I guess we are going to soon see the fallout of this. If there is going to be, you know, an immediate confrontation between them, if Emma is going to have to actually think about this because, you know, it's a solution. So very different one than one she's been working towards.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's wrap this up.
We don't have One Piece this week, so we got to end on Black Clover this time.
Everyone's favorite.
I wish there were more to talk about in this chapter because I don't have a lot to say about it.
Black Clover, page 190. Go! Because there's four exclamation points in this one. So
yes.
It starts with the two dickheads.
Also, there's a sound effect on that first panel that's going, oh! So.
All of these things are very relevant to the context of the chapter as well, by the way. Yes. So we start with the purple orca douchebags who were freed from prison, who are just like, I don't know. Let's go rob things, I guess. And that's really all we see from them. We're not, I don't know. We'll see them later, I guess. So we see all the members of the Black Bulls are eating and getting. I wonder if Tabata is doing it because he could just reuse the same fucking shots of these characters like three or four times per chapter, because there's always a shot of like seven characters fucking eating her magic healing food over and over again. So there's even a moment then where Noelle is like, oh man, you were being reckless. You really are hopeless about me. And so Sally's like, that's an unusual body you've got there, so take care of it. So Noelle's like, what? Why are you wearing Asta's clothes? And Asta's like, I don't know, her clothes were falling apart, so I loaned her these. And I'm like, I guess he pulled clothes out of the wreckage that was the Black Bull headquarters.
One of my swords summons clothing!
Didn't you hear about that? That's the other thing my swords can do.
Also, despite them having very different build, they seem to fit her pretty damn well.
Yeah, so it's just enough that it looks basically like what she was wearing before. But, you know, I guess there's a kindness to it. And she talks, she's like, once it's over, Brasta promised I could do anything with his body. And, of course, the two fucking harem love interests are both like, oh, what do you mean? Because they misconstrue it as meaning something sexual. Anyways. A bunch of elves show up and they're like, we're going to break anything. We're going to destroy you. And then Locke steps in front of everybody because he's ready to fight. But then Mary Liliana and Fuego Leon have both shown up at the same time to be like, we're here. And it's very cool. Like, it is cool to see Fuego Leon. And I'm like, and Mary Liliana is there too. Huzzah.
It's very much just like, this is such a shonen chapter, honestly. Because it's like, ah, so you are here. Yes, and you are here too. And this is my character. This is my character archetype, and this is my character archetype. Let's do one-liners at each other that reveal our very, very, very basic and easy-to-grasp personalities.
Exactly. There is a cute moment, though, where Asta sees Fuego Leon again, so it's very nice that they have that moment of just like, ah, looks like you got stronger, and it's good to see you. And then fucking Nozel? Is that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just a stupid name. Nozel's like, you're here too. I hope you haven't gotten poopy in your sleep time.
I hope you haven't turned...
Absolute. I bet
you're really
shit.
Basic now, scrub.
I hope you haven't turned to complete dog shit since I saw you last. And then the hole they notice is shrinking, so they have to hurry because once they fit the magic stone into that final hole, the elf restoration reincarnation thing, it's complete and irreversible, and everyone else's souls goes away. So then a bunch of elf people show up. I don't think any of them are significant. Is the dice guy went up to the top platform, so that's not even who this guy is. So they're like, oh no, we gotta get these guys. They're senior Dawn Mage. But the members of the Black Bulls are like, we'll handle this. So basically the captains are gonna head to the Shadow Palace. But then Magna's like,
And also me. Yeah,
basically like seven other people are like, we should go too. So Asta's gonna go. It's like, because
it's down to just Gray by herself facing off against, oh well, everyone else decided that they were gonna go up and fight the fucking guys and no one else would help them off. Okay,
you know what, maybe I should have said I'll go too at this point.
My whole thing is copying people.
I don't know why I decided to be the one person to stay behind. Anyway, Asta's gonna go, Mimosa's gonna go. Fucking slimy other brother shows up and is like, you go too, Noel, because you're strong.
Also, I've decided you're strong now, which means you have value to me. What a nice family we have.
We're great. So, Fuego Leon, Mary Elena, Asta, Mimosa, Nozel. I think those are the six people. They're headed up there. I wonder at some point, Roddy's and the other dude are supposed to do something, I presume. I don't know. But maybe they will. And our chapter ends with a close-up on Neru having an ellipses. So, dun, dun, dun. Maybe something happens here.
Well, he's perched on Gauche's head. So, he's just, like, staring up into the sky as the, you know, flyers fly up into the portal. So
we'll see what happens there. Yeah, there's not a super ton to talk about in the chapter, unfortunately. So,
it's, you know... Regrouping is done. Everyone fight now. Chapter. So, okay. Yeah.
I wish that was an archetype for Jump chapters. Like, it's like, this is the everyone show up, regroup, say one-liner chapter.
Pretty much. That's what happens. So. Yeah. All right. Got through that really quickly. So, good. I am tired, and I need to go to work after this. So, yay. Let's wrap things up. Chris, what was your favorite series this week? And what was the MVP?
So I'm going to give my favorite series to Boruto this week. I really like that chapter of Boruto. Thought it was super solid. And, I've been slowly becoming more and more interested in Boruto.
Good. I'm going to give mine to Dr. Stone. That was a solid chapter. Actually, you know what? I'm going to give mine to Neolation, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like I said, this really, this little story arc has really impressed me, and I want to give props to that. This chapter in particular for the weird twist and the sudden change into, Nagami Neru, like you said, and then his mind breaks.
Like, not like a joke to end the chapter on just him.
Bye, everyone.
See you next week, everybody. See you next week, kids.
So, yes, there.
I dig it. And my MVP, I'm going to give it to Naruto. I really like that moment. I really liked him saying, like, the thing you mistaken is that I'm including Kawaki in my kids. It's a very, very significant moment for him.
And I've given mine to Escanor, because he had character growth.
Mm-hmm. I liked it.
But he stayed true to himself at the end. I liked that he, got all panicky and desperate and made the big, oh, just take it back plea, and then no. And so then he was more true to his prideful self that then I'll let you borrow it for now, and that worked instead. So
The audience, by the way, picked Dr. Stone as their favorite series, and there's actually a tie when it comes to the MVP. There's an equal number for Taiju and an equal number for Aizawa from My Hero Academia. So in case you guys are ever interested, if adding your thoughts to the audience pick is something you'd like to do, make sure to join the WMR Discord. If you're listening on YouTube, there's a link now in the description for each episode, so you can click that and you can just jump right in. If you're listening on the other things, then go find a YouTube episode and click the link, because I don't know the Discord link number off the top of my head.
Live streaming for the show happens Mondays, sometime around 7:38. We started late this time, p.m. Eastern. You can do that, smashcast.tv/RoloT, twitch.tv/RoloT. Follow us for updates on Twitter. Nick F. Time is me. RoloT is him.
Me.
WMR Podcast is we. Past episodes, weeklymugrecap.podbean.com. On our YouTube channel. On iTunes. Subscribe, comment, rate, all that. Beat Woodworkers, Big Kings of Hobby section. This is a very abridged version of this whole spiel.
By the way, guys, for our Patreon, so we put out the WMR Lives that was a makeup for December that's on Act Age. And coming up very soon, guys, is going to be a commentary that we do for Dragon Ball Evolution as we quote-unquote celebrate the 10-year anniversary of that movie. So
reminisce. Yes.
We reminisce on the review we did and all sorts of thoughts. It's a ton of really cool stuff. So if you're curious, check that out. Just be a bonus patron in January and you'll be at access to that. That should be going up in like the next day or so.
Ended up being a very interesting set of conversations we had, because we had a lot of very different thoughts that ended up being put into that video we did forever ago. It was interesting to go back and revisit that movie that we were so taken with, let's just say.
I wish we'd watch Taken instead.
I've never seen Taken.
It's good. The first one. Liam Neeson shoots a woman.
Okay.
I don't know what. It's one of the most distinct parts of that movie. He shoots a dude's wife just to prove a point.
Send feedback. Ask us questions for future Q&A episodes. Suggest manga for us to read. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Also, of course, the Discord channel can be used for that kind of stuff, especially for manga suggestions. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. As Chris mentioned, there is special stuff available for you there if you become a backer. And we also, of course, want to thank Steve Maritalk, our artist, Infamous Planet, and Ninja X3i for helping us out on all sorts of different stuff.
Absolutely.
That's going to do it.
Anything you want to say to the audience, Nick, before we head off into the sunset? Any predictions, Nick, on Kingdom Hearts 3 and how the story is going to go?
I think that Aqua will turn evil.
That's a bold pick. I like it. You're like the Tony Romo of predicting anime storylines.
What a very specific reference. No one's going to get that who listens to our show.
That's why it's the perfect reference. Goodbye, everybody.